Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on the road, filming. We're going to talk today about the latest study done at the University Institute of Technology that shows that there's a lot of health-promoting qualities in red raspberries. Most people don't eat red raspberries, in part because they go bad so quickly, they mold so quickly. So people get other ones like blueberries that last longer. Let's rethink red raspberries, and I'll tell you how you can get them so that they're not going to mold on you. Vinegar could potentially help treat ulcerative colitis. That's according to the American Chemical Society. And couch potatoes, there are a lot of those in America, may have smaller brains later in life. Boston University School of Medicine. Also, those people who follow a lipid-based diet effectively combat Alzheimer's disease. And what is a lipid-based diet? We talk about it all the time. And inhibiting age-related inflammation maintains healthy gut microbiota and extends lifespan. Buck Institute on Aging. So we have a lot to share today. Plus today, if time permits, the Irish people hear the truth about the human papillomavirus vaccine. A very compelling talk by an Irish teenager speaks on behalf of the 250 Irish schoolgirls that we know of from the support group Regret, who suffer post-Gardasil chronic illness. This is something for all the mothers in this country and around the world, because we're heard all over the world. Please pay attention. There is no longer a need for you to sacrifice your children at the altar of American medical and pharmaceutical greed and arrogance and hubris. Also, the Trans-Pacific Partnership has been signed, but that does not mean it's been fully enacted into law. We still need to get everyone involved in stopping it. Let your legislators know you will try to vote them out of office if they pass this terrible, deadly piece of legislation. We'll give you a professor talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and why it is so bad. I have a newsmaker guest today, Professor Carl Grossman. He's going to talk about the update on what's occurring at Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant. It's not good. And even though I'm on the road, I'm going to try to get my office in New York to let me know if we can put up for you to watch today and share with every member of the New York State Legislature knocking on the devil's door, our deadly nuclear legacy. Interesting. This film is about 5 years old. Everything I put into that film is coming true today, so it's very timely. My regular guest today in our guest segment, talking about the failures of standard thyroid testing to determine lingering thyroid-related illnesses, is Dr. Gil Kajiki, and he is perhaps the nation's leading expert on non-drug treatment for thyroid conditions, particularly hypothyroidism, low thyroid, and Hashimoto's disease. So we'll be talking with him about a condition that never gets any discussion, but is very important. And I have a lot of other things, but I don't know if I'll be able to get to them because we're going to spend a lot of time on these. Let's begin. First up, we should be eating more berries. Berries are one of nature's most perfect nutritional powerhouses. The more of the red fruit that you consume, the better it is for you. It's not me saying that. It's not even people's massive amount of experience over 1,000 years. Rather, it's the good scientific literature. Let me just give you one example of this. And today, it's going to be the raspberry. This is from the Illinois Institute of Technology. And here's what they have to say on it. I'll quote directly from them. It says, components in red raspberries may have anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, and metabolic stabilizing activity. That's according to a comprehensive review of the available scientific literature published in the current issue Advances in Nutrition. These properties shed light on the potential role of the red raspberry in helping to reduce the risk of metabolically based chronic disease, including cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, and Alzheimer's disease, all of which share critical metabolic oxidative inflammatory links. Red raspberries contribute a number of valuable essential nutrients, including 9 grams of fiber per 1 cup. By the way, that's a huge amount, and it's a very soft one, and hence is very good. They also contain phytochemicals, and these are very active in the body. Quote, turns out what is good for the heart is also good for the brain. That is what is particularly interesting about the research on red raspberries, their potential to help reduce factors contributing to metabolic syndrome, as diabetes, which has implications for diabetes development, overall cardiovascular and brain health. And that's according to Dr. Burton Friedman, the director of the Center for Nutrition Research. So it really is good for the heart. And there's a lot of information on red raspberries and the heart, mainly because of what is called ellagic acid. Ellagic, E-L-L-A-G-I-C. It's the primary breakdown product of the ellagatannins, and they can reduce oxidative stress and inflammation. They turn down the flame inside the body. That helps decrease atherosclerosis. It increases vasodilation. That means your arteries are kind of opening up, allowing greater blood flow, and it lowers your blood pressure. And all of that is terrific. It helps with diabetes, obesity, and Alzheimer's disease. Keep in mind, I've mentioned this many times, metabolic syndrome refers to a cluster of cardiometabolic risk factors, including how much weight you have on your belly fat, and buttock fat, and if you have high blood pressure or impaired glucose and insulin metabolism, as well as if you have elevated triglycerides. People don't realize that elevated triglycerides are one quick way to have a heart attack. You do not want elevated triglycerides. They are deadly when they're elevated. And also you don't want the high LDL, low-density lipoproteins. That's also risky for your heart. But all of this ends up impairing cognitive function, creates dementia, and development of Alzheimer's. So how about that? Something as simple as 1 pint of raspberries a day. Now, raspberries are seasonal, and at some points of the year, they're very expensive. So what to do? Couple things. The most obvious is buy organic frozen raspberries. And what they do is they wash them and immediately freeze-dry them. So all of the nutrition and the enzymes, antioxidants, everything is put into suspended animation. So then you get it and you store it. And I believe everybody should have a backup emergency food locker, a freezer. And in there you put bags of your protein powder, your antioxidants, and you can put them in these Ziploc bags and they'll stay for years and years and years and years and be completely healthy. Then you just take them out, thaw them, and it's ready to eat. This way, if there ever is an emergency, and let us hope there is not, but for hundreds of millions of people a year around the world, tens of thousands in the United States, fires, tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, drought, earthquakes, yeah, one day they wake up and they don't have power, they don't have gas, they don't have electricity, they don't have foods that are able to be stored. So then they up in trouble. So have yourself some dried powders that can last for 5 years, frozen almost indefinitely. Now, vinegar could potentially help treat ulcerative colitis, a big condition in the United States. According to the American Chemical Society, vinegar is the perfect ingredient for making tangy sauces and dressings. Now research reports in the Journal of the Agriculture and Food Chemistry that apple cider vinegar could also help fight ulcerative colitis, which, as we know, is a very severe inflammatory bowel disease that is based upon gut microbiomes. And they found that vinegar suppresses inflammation, inducing proteins, while improving the gut's bacterial makeup. And that's in their laboratory studies. Now, ulcerative colitis, by the way, is a chronic condition that affects millions of people. And people are confused about what causes it. They say, well, we don't know exactly what causes it, and that's correct. But from the people that I have counseled, it is a combination of extraordinary stress. Younger they are, the greater the stress, the greater the ulcerative colitis. Overperforming, overtasked, over-accomplishing, and over-expected to be living in someone else's a perfect model. So you get a lot of, especially single children. This is not for everyone, of course, but when you get people to de-stress and realize they're okay, they don't have to live up to everyone else's expectation, and just to exhale and chill out and relax, it makes an enormous improvement in their condition. Then having lemon juice with apple cider vinegar, equal parts in the morning, great for alkalizing your system. And that also helps. And then rebuild with positive bacteria, folic acid and B12, 1 milligram of the very powerful, best type of folic acid, and B12 is methylated. Then to have probiotics probably twice, maybe three times a day. That would be terrific. And then stay away from anything that is inflammatory, especially coffee. I remember in my home, we had one couch, and it had three indentations. And that was because my brother Steve, who I believe at that point was pictured, if there was a Google growing up, he would have been there laying, smiling, saying, this couch is perfect, because I don't think he ever got out of the couch. And that's how he slept, and that's how he laid watching television on that stupid couch. Well, a lot of people are couch potatoes. They love the couch. Not good. Here's the latest in Boston University School of Medicine. Quote, poor physical fitness in middle age may be linked to a smaller brain size 20 years later, according to a study just published in Neurology, the medical journal of the American Academy of Neurology. Quote, we found a direct correlation in our study between poor fitness and brain volume decades later, which indicates accelerated brain aging. And that was by a Dr. Nicole Spartano of Boston University School of Medicine in Boston. And they studied 1,583 people. And so the longer you lay on that couch watching television, the smaller your brain. And then one day, you look out and you realize there's no brain left, just a body and a head. And we have a lot of those people. Lipid-based diets effectively combat Alzheimer's disease in the mouse model. This is important. Quote, Alzheimer's disease is the most common disease underlying memory problems, dementia, in the elderly. One of the invariable pathologies in Alzheimer's disease is degeneration of the synapses in brain cortex and hippocampus. Despite enormous efforts to find out an efficient treatment, current pharmacological interventions are limited to a few drugs that alleviate symptoms but do not slow down the underlying disease process. These drugs include inhibitors of enzymes that degrade the neurotransmitter acetylcholine and a modulator of glutamate neurotransmission. Then it goes on to talk about how within the European Union-funded project, Lipid Diet, therapeutic and preventative impact of nutritional lipids. Those are fats. Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia, researchers devised several lipid-based diets aimed at slowing down progression and alleviating or relieving symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. This was a short-term, three-week feeding. This is just the title of the article. Here's what's important. The findings showed that a diet rich in essential fatty acids, in, let's say, the fish oils or the flaxseed oils, were able to show a reverse or decrease in the problems of the brain, and that was important. So, the people in the European Union, the people in the Mediterranean diet, they do not have the same incidence or severity of Alzheimer's that we have in the United States because they have a lot of oil. Olive oil, olives, walnuts, very common there, oily fish, sardines in particular. And if you must eat fish, the healthiest fish for you to eat would be wild sardines. The worst fish you could eat would be tilapia, catfish. These are, and salmon, that are farm-raised. Very, very unhealthy. And finally, inhibiting age-related inflammation maintains healthy gut microbiota and extends lifespan. Quote, from the peer-reviewed journal Cell Host and Microbe, where this was published, we know that aging is associated with a wide range of tissue dysfunctions. Among these are conditions in which one kind of tissue is replaced by another type, causing misregulation of regional tissue functions. And in the case of having constantly feeding sugar, alcohol, refined carbohydrates, and meat, you disrupt the very important healthy gut microbiota and create inflammatory, bad bacteria. By reversing that, you can extend your lifespan. So clean up your diet, go to a healthy, organic, vegan, or plant-based diet, and you have a whole lot of good coming to you. By the way, a good study on coenzyme Q10 that showed that coenzyme Q10 is an effective weapon against gum disease. Now, we know that gum disease is a chronic health condition that occurs when the tissues around the teeth get infected. And, of course, redness and bleeding or discomfort around the gums is telling you that there's a problem. And most people, unfortunately, leave it unchecked. And a small degree of gum disease can grow into a much more serious condition. So gum disease is linked to a deficiency of coenzyme Q10. So when you're getting 100 to 300 milligrams of coenzyme Q10 a day, you're helping your gums. And that's this latest science. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break and come back. And when we come back, we will be joined by Professor Carl Grossman as a newsmaker to bring us up to date on the problems that we're finding with the Indian Point nuclear facility, serious problems, and what we should do about it. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone, from all over the world. I thank you for joining us and sharing your insights, and also the fact that this audience in particular, all over the world, is constantly sharing different types of information, articles, documentaries, and we appreciate that. And today, any of you who have a copy of Knocking on the Devil's Door, A Deadly Nuclear Legacy, please share it with the state legislators in New York and even the governor. I'm asking our staff in New York if they can get me a copy of it. And they've just told me it's on YouTube.com. And so the Gary Knoll YouTube. So you go up on Gary Knoll YouTube and you can download it and share it with individuals. They need to see this because what we predicted, what my guest Professor Carl Grossman, what Michio Kaku and Helen Caldicott and all Harvey Wasserman, all of the individuals that I filmed for that film, what they said is now coming true. So it was very prophetic. So share that documentary today with as many people as possible, but make sure, I'm sure someone in the audience knows how to work the, let's say, the internet to get an electronic copy of Knocking on the Devil's Door to them so that they can watch for themselves something that's not handled by lobbyists for the nuclear industry. Professor Carl Grossman, out in Old Westbury, New York, is a professor of journalism and communications at SUNY College in Old Westbury. He's taught investigative reporting for over 30 years, and he's one of the nation's most prolific investigative writers on the nuclear power, politics, in the energy industry, and the environment. This year, he received the prestigious Pope Award for his many articles written during the past year. And you can read his articles on Counterpunch, Common Dreams, and the Huffington Post. He also wrote Cover Up, What You're Not Being or Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power, and The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet. Nice to have you with us today, Carl.
A pleasure to be on with you, Gary.
Carl, the first issue, before we go to how serious this is, they're downplaying it. I'm just curious, as a senator from New York, is there any evidence that Hillary Clinton went to bat for Entergy, the big nuclear power plant that owns Indian Point, and to keep Indian Point open or prevent inspectors or reviews of safety issues at the reactor? And I think that would be very important because the American public does not know that the Clintons, their tag team match, have had a love affair with nuclear power going back to Arkansas and the Rose Law Firm, and Ron Emanuel being one of the creators of Exelon, now the nation's largest nuclear power company, and owning most of the reactors. Yet that part of Ron Emanuel, who was the head of the White House, chief of staff, who's now mayor of Chicago, and all of the lobbying that was done, never did it come to pass that the Clintons were shown and Ron Emanuel shown, and also David Axelrod shown. He ran his Obama's two successful campaigns, that all these people were tied into the nuclear industry. Could we deal with that first? Then we'll go to Indian Point.
Yeah, I've written a lot about Emanuel Axelrod and why Barack Obama did a 180-degree flip when he became president on nuclear power. I mean, before he was elected, he was for safe, clean, renewable energy. Indeed, he told a newspaper, and this is, you were speaking before of the internet. It's on the internet, his little speech about how the problems with these nuclear plants is they can explode and kill a lot of people. He gets into the White House, and he's pushing this clean nuclear power technology. Why? A variety of reasons, but you've hit on two big ones. His White House chief of staff, Ron Emanuel, indeed put together Exelon, which is now the biggest nuclear utility in the country. This is between Emanuel being a congressperson and chief of staff. He was involved on Wall Street, and Axelrod, his background is in PR, and guess who did PR for this new utility, Exelon? David Axelrod. And lo and behold, with these two, a right-hand man and a left-hand man with him, Obama did this flip. Let me note, too, that his big Obama's big program, because Wall Street is very nervous, despite Rahm Emanuel's activities, about the economics of nuclear power. So what Obama has been pushing in these 7 years has been we, the taxpayer, providing loan guarantees to the nuclear industry so new nuclear plants can be built. And a few of them are being built today down south.
Good. Now let's take a look at the current issues facing Indian Point. And from your perspective, what do you see the likely or possible outcome to be, and what should be done about it?
Well, fortunately here, talking about politicians, Andrew Cuomo has been demanding that this Indian Point facility, it's two big nuclear plants, there used to be a third that's been shut down, didn't even have a proper emergency cooling system. So there's Indian Point 2 and 3, and these are, well, actually, years ago, Robert Pollard, who worked for the then Atomic Energy Commission, described the Indian Point nuclear facility as an accident waiting to happen. And we're talking about a nuclear disaster to be just 26 miles north of New York City. How it would affect, in terms of a Fukushima-level accident, the millions of people who live in New York City and environs. Indeed, there's 22 million people who live within 50 miles of Indian Point. And we're talking catastrophe. Meanwhile, there's been just constant smaller, medium-sized accidents. And right now what's occurring is that there's been the discovery. In fact, it's been going on for over 20 years of tritium, which is radioactive water, H3O, leaking from the Indian Point facility. And Cuomo, this is just last week, issued a statement noting that the increase in recent times in this tritium level was 65,000%. 65,000%. Now, the people who are supposed to be protecting us, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they say, you know, be happy, don't worry. These people are, well, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission actually replaced the Atomic Energy Commission because the AEC was such an incredible booster of nuclear power and a regulator at the same time. The Congress, unusually, in terms of nuclear technology, did the right thing and eliminated the AEC and created the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and also the Department of Energy later on. Both, too, are boosters. The NRC is no regulator. It's a lapdog. NRC, no real concerns. So here you have radioactive water, loads of it, just loads of it. Again, it's been happening at Indian Point since 1985. Massive leakage of radioactive water. Some of it's going to get into the Hudson River. I mean, the nukes are right there on the Hudson River. And some of it is going to get into the groundwater. And let me just note that the reservoir system from New York City is not very far from the Indian Point facility. Paul Gunter of the organization Beyond Nuclear, he said in connection to the Indian Point tritium leakage, today's groundwater is somebody's drinking water someday. Water recycles, it's not made, it's a gift. It's a gift with Entergy, this company Entergy, which, like Exelon, it's a McNuke company, big into the nuclear industry. Entergy really doesn't give a damn for the health and welfare of the public, and so outrageously, too, the entity that is supposed to protect us from companies like Entergy, from those behind nuclear power, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, no real concerns.
How serious could this be?
Well, tritium, again, H3O, is carcinogenic. It causes cancer. It doesn't cause cancer immediately. People don't drop dead and fall in the gutter in Buchanan, New York, where the nuclear plants are located. But there's, as you have often noted, Gary, radioactivity at smaller or moderate levels has a latency or an incubation period of 5 to 40 years before the nuclear poisons kick back with cancer is the key issue here, the main issue. So if somebody up in Buchanan or somebody in White Plains or somebody in Brooklyn or the Bronx ends up in 25 or 10 or what have you years from now with cancer, radioactivity doesn't leave a calling card. But when you allow, as Entergy is allowing, as the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is allowing, this hotly radioactive, and you can't filter out H3O, you can't filter out tritium from water. I mean, it is water, but it's radioactive water. If those illnesses, those diseases, those deaths that easily could occur in future years could be traced, I think in the end, particularly for people who live around those nukes in Buchanan, the Indian Point nukes, this tritium could be a culprit.
We're not even considering how many people living in the area of the spills have underground wells.
Yes.
And therefore, they're not even counted. And I know a lot of people have their own wells because they want to be self-sufficient. They have good, clean drinking water. And you could have thousands of these wells that could end up being contaminated, and the state and the federal government are not going in there to test people's well water.
Yeah. This is a generic issue, Gary, really around every nuclear plant in the United States, in the world. In fact, there's been very important studies by Dr. Jeanette Sherman, who I know you know well, and Joseph Mangano, of cancer clusters around nuclear plants. I live on Long Island, and thankfully, here on Long Island, a plan to build 7 to 11, we would be a U.S. version of Fukushima nuclear plants on Long Island, was stopped by strong citizen action back in the, it went on for 20 years, finally in the 80s, this scheme of the Long Island Lighting Company was stopped, and the first of the 7 to 11 plans, Shoreham, though it was completed, was prevented from going into operation. Nevertheless, there's a place on Long Island called Brookhaven National Laboratory. It had two reactors in operation. And guess what were leaking from those two reactors? Just like the Indian Point nukes. Again, it's so common. It's just routine. Tritium. In fact, at the end of this month, there's to be a class action suit brought to trial. It's been pending for 20 years. Top lawyers, Richard Lippe, who represented Lois Gibbs on Love Canal, Craig Purcell, former president of the Suffolk Bar Association, their lead attorneys on this this important class action suit involving same deal as up at Indian Point, tritium leaking. And there was one book, Kelly McMasters wrote the book, Welcome to an Atomic Town, about the community of Shirley, which is just to the south of Brookhaven National Laboratory, and widespread cancer in this community of Shirley. An excellent documentary, The Atomic States of America, was based on the book. It was at the Sundance Festival a few years ago. It was shown. So a class action lawsuit is going ahead. But again, in terms of the stacked deck that I speak of, whether it be the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, previously the Atomic Energy Commission, would you believe that an appellate court in New York State has ruled that this class action suit can't bring up radioactivity? It can talk about the other contamination. I mean, Brookhaven Lab, like many of these national nuclear labs, Los Alamos, Oak Ridge, and so forth, Superfund sites, the plaintiffs cannot talk about, you can't talk about radioactivity, you're going to have to sue on other grounds. And let me just add, because it's a cousin of the snow job that Entergy is giving the public right now in regards to the tritium at around the Indian Point plants. What the scientists have been saying at Brookhaven Lab through the years is, don't worry about the tritium. Yeah, it's in the groundwater on Long Island, where you were mentioning wells before. Long Islanders, they don't get their water. I mean, people upstate some of them, a lot of them actually get their water from the Hudson and other rivers and so forth. On Long Island, there's a sole source aquifer. Long Island is solely dependent on the underground water table for their potable water. And this tritium from Brookhaven Lab has been getting into the sole source of water for Long Islanders. And what the scientists have been saying at Brookhaven Lab is, don't worry, tritium, for example, is used in exit signs, to light up exit signs. Well, that begs the question, should tritium be used in exit signs? What happens when exit signs are disposed of in landfills and so forth, that tritium will leak out? I mean, tritium should be outlawed. It should be stopped from getting into our ecosystems. And as to Indian Point, there's only one, I mean, this must happen. Indian Point must be shut down. Those nukes have been, 2 and 3, have been in operation for over, well, I mean, it's been decades, way beyond. Nuclear plants were considered to have a life of maybe 30 years. And after that, the radiation would make them so embrittled, the metals in particular, it would be a very unsafe situation. Those two Indian Point plants are way beyond their planned so-called lifetimes. They should be today, shut down. Before what Pollard spoke about decades ago, an accident waiting to happen, happens. And it's okay. With those Indian Point plants, with their terrible records through the years, a catastrophic accident is just, in my view, inevitable, absolutely inevitable.
Carl, we're certainly on board with you on this and for your decades of work on bringing us these stories. We deeply appreciate it. Professor Carl Grossman, author of Cover Up, What You're Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power. Here is what we can do today, right now, for those of you who care about bringing some sense of safety to the 22 million people living in the New York area within 50 miles. And keep in mind, if there's any disaster there, then you are going to have a 12-mile-an-hour wind average. That means within 4 hours, before anyone can exit, even know that there's a problem, in most cases, you've already started contaminating every one of those 22 million people. And there's no exit strategy. There's no way for 99% of the people to get out of harm's way. And if we had a Fukushima experience here, we would be poisoning all 22 million people, plus all of their houses, buildings. It would be the biggest financial disaster, human disaster, from a nuclear power plant in history. Let's stop it. We stop it first with information and knowledge. Well, I was just informed that Knocking on the Devil's Door, Our Deadly Nuclear Legacy, the multi-award-winning documentary, is now up on PRN.FM. PRN is in Nancy, PRN.FM. Watch it. It's free. It's a public service. Then share it with everyone you know. But if any of you have any access to the legislators and the governor, please share it with them and let them know what they may not know. Let us just assume that they may only know the lobbyist perspective and not the full truth. This bears the full truth. Everyone who had something important to say on nuclear power was in the film. So let's go to PRN.FM, download Knocking on the Devil's Door, and share it today so we can close down Indian Point. And once you've been fully educated, then ask your legislators to work with the governor in closing down Indian Point. I'm Gary Nall. Now let's go to another topic before we go to our guest, who is standing by. Dr. Gil Kajaki is online to talk about thyroid. But I'm going to start a series tomorrow. It'll run for about 15 to 20 days, about 10 minutes each day. I'm going to share insights on, as if you were in my class at a master's or doctorate level, but in lay language so you understand the truth about all vaccines. We're going to start with the idea, do they actually give us immunity? And the instructor is a professor in immunology who took a careful look, spent thousands of hours. And now this immunologist is telling us, whoa, we have been misled, lied to. So our goal is to fully educate the public because we don't have a war chest. We don't have tens of millions of dollars that the vaccine companies, which are the pharmaceutical companies, have to promote vaccines. We don't have thousands of trolls out there working on our behalf, polluting the airway with lies. We don't have teams of assassins of people's character and reputation writing libelous or making slanderous statements in the media about those who challenge vaccines. We're just citizens, educated and concerned. The deep education on vaccine begins tomorrow. Now, to the Irish people, you were lied to, you were abused, your children were harmed. You have every right to be outraged, and you should fight back. But all Americans, listen to their lesson, their tragedy, so that you can prevent your child from being another victim.
We're going to start the debate with a discussion on social issues, including health and education and other related issues. Let me start with the person with the red microphone.
Hi, my name is Shannon Delaney. I'm 17 years old. I have a health question in relation to the HPV vaccine. I'm a member of the Regret Group, which is reaction and effects of Gardasil resulting in extreme trauma. I've been chronically ill since receiving the HPV vaccine. I got the 3 doses at the age of 13. Before this, I was a sporty, confident, outgoing girl. I played for Lomond's GAA. I'd done cross-country, tennis, swimming, and taekwondo. And now I can't make it outside the door. I suffer with chronic fatigue, chronic pain, very bad anxiety, brain fog, fainting, breathing problems, and generally feeling unwell. All the girls in Regret have been told numerous times that our illness is in our heads and is part of being a teenager and grown up. This is not in my head and it's not normal. I'm not in school at the moment and I was refused homeschooling. I'm due to sit my leave insert in June. I'm missing out on the simple things like socialising. I'm not living the life my friends are living. Okay. I want to ask the panel, what are they going to do to help me and over 250 girls that are suffering since receiving the HPV vaccine? Also, we are not anti-vaccine, otherwise I would not be in this situation.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that. Okay, the question might be...
Okay, just one student, one young woman giving her information, and now she can't function. There are tens of thousands of those in the United States. There have been hundreds who've died. At what point do we as a people stand up and get in the face of American science and medicine, which has sold its soul for money or position or power, and say no more? You have no right to determine what goes into my body. Parents have that right. The school teachers don't. They're unqualified. The doctors don't. They have not done their own homework, as you will find out. And legislators, well, what can we say about legislators? Nothing that's good. Take back the power. Say no and mean it. Let's go over and say hello to my guest who is standing by in Old Westbury, New York, Dr. Gil Kajiki. That's K-A-J-I-K-I. Nice to have you with us today.
Good morning, Gary.
Recently, there was a piece in Life Extension magazine about the failures of conventional thyroid hormone and gland testing. Now, the article stated that approximately 50% of people suffering from thyroid malfunction simply go undiagnosed. And what we're witnessing today is virtually, in my opinion, an epidemic of weight gain and obesity and chronic fatigue and stress that leads to cardiovascular disease, neurotransmitter imbalance, and even infertility, all conditions on the rise and all conditions that can be related to thyroid problems. Now, in your own case, it was your wife who had Hashimoto's disease that went undetected by conventional diagnostic test, and it was only after your personal research that this was discovered. So first, please begin by stating the prevalence of thyroid malfunction in the nation today, and then speak about the failures of conventional thyroid or TSH testing, in particular T3 and T4, as insufficient markers to measure, and then what other tests, such as thyroid antibodies, are you performing and recommending to catch thyroid conditions that are not being identified by standard testing?
Right. Okay. Well, according to the American Thyroid Association, there's about 60% of the American public will have some kind of a thyroid condition and go undiagnosed properly. That's about 27 million Americans will come down with some kind of a thyroid condition. The reason why it's being not diagnosed properly is because in traditional medicine, where you go to the endocrinologist, the GPs, the gynecologist, they typically will only do TSH and free T4. And maybe if you beg them, they'll give you free T3. That's only 3 out of the possible 11 thyroid tests. Well, why don't they do the other tests? Because they don't need to justify their medication with any other test other than TSH and free T4 and free T3, which are great tests. But if you're missing the thyroid antibodies, the thyroid peroxidase, the thyroid antiglobulin, which tells you if you have an autoimmune condition, more so than you have a thyroid condition, you're completely missing that. And the reason the traditional doctors don't do that is because their only choices for treatment are medication, radiation, and surgery. So why do the other tests if all you're going to do is give thyroid medication? And in only 17% of all the underactive thyroid cases, if you're using medication as your sole purpose, your sole use of treatment, only 17% of those cases is it going to be effective. So we got a big problem on our hands with doctors.
That's a major problem. A major problem. There's a situation of underdiagnosing.
Correct.
Now, is it more often the case that hyper or hypothyroidism is most commonly undetected? And just briefly explain what Hashimoto's autoimmune disease is and its symptoms.
Right. Well, hyperthyroid is less common, and the autoimmune condition of hyperthyroid is called Graves. That's not very common, not nearly as common as hypothyroid. But in Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune condition, that means your own immune system is attacking your own thyroid, you will go through periods of hyperthyroid, hypothyroid, hyperthyroid, hypothyroid. So you go through these roller coaster of fast and slow thyroid symptoms. So all depending upon when the blood gets drawn by the doctor, they might detect it as hyperthyroid, they might detect it as hypothyroid. And if you're one of those patients that can't get your medication dosage regulated right, it's because your TSH is all over the place from this Hashimoto's condition, and they're trying to treat a immune system problem with a thyroid medication. It just doesn't work.
Good. What are the most common and most serious risks of people living with an undetected malfunctioning thyroid? And other than potential hereditary and genetic etiologies, what are the most common poor lifestyle and dietary practices people have to contribute to their own thyroid conditions?
Well, I think the most common one that we have right now is the American public is loading themselves up with lots of pesticides and GMOs and high carbohydrate foods with lots of preservatives. We're eating on the run. We're eating fast food. We're eating convenient food. We're not eating whole foods. We're not taking time to make our own meals in-house. And so we have these horrible lifestyle eating habits. We're eating horrible foods. We have incredible amounts of stress, which is throwing off our adrenal gland and our cortisol rhythms, which is in turn throwing off our blood sugar, which is causing hypothyroid. And these horrible foods are causing gut inflammation and leaky gut problems where your T4, T3 conversion occurs. So we're having all these spillovers into all these other systems from lousy lifestyle and genetics.
You just mentioned the gut microbiome. And more we're finding out that our full immune system, not just the innate immune system, but our full immune system benefits by having a healthy gut. What is the relationship between a healthy diet, a plant-based diet, juicing, supplements, exercise, stress management, seaweed, and a healthy thyroid?
Well, the conversion from T4, the inactive thyroid hormone, to T3 occurs primarily in the liver and the gut. And if you're not eating a diverse diet with lots of plant-based foods, then you're not having a wide variety of what we call the gut microbiome, which is all the good bacteria in your gut, which helps some of your short-chain fatty acids, help control your T regulatory cell function, and that T regulatory cell function helps govern your whole immune system and determine whether or not what kinds of foods you can and cannot eat.
Makes sense. In closing, what would you suggest for people to help them other than the Synthroid or Levoloxal or the hypothyroid, for the hypothyroid that is common out there?
Well, I think you have to consider the fact that if you are feeling thyroid symptoms, it may not only be thyroid. There are body dysfunctions that I call triggers, which are like anemia and adrenal gland dysfunction and gut inflammation and leaky gut problems and hormone imbalance and blood sugar problems. Those triggers very closely mimic a thyroid problem but isn't a thyroid problem. So you could have the triggers, you could have the autoimmune component, and you could have the thyroid component all going on at the same time. And a thyroid medication is not going to resolve that. So you have to do some exploring with lab testing to find what these other triggers and if you have this autoimmune component going on.
I appreciate you coming on and sharing these important insights. The information is The Thyroid Mystery Solved. The website is valleythyroidinstitute.com. My guest, Dr. Gil, G-I-L, Kajiki, K-A-J-I-K-I. Thanks for being with us today, Gil.
Thank you so much, Gary.
Now, we're going to close our program today by listening to a discussion, a talk about what's wrong with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. All of us in the public health field, all of us in the human rights, all of us in environmental issues are going to be adversely affected. Everything that we've worked so hard for so long, cooperatively together, is going to be wiped away when they finally pass, when Congress fully passes and it's implemented as law, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They've signed it. Now they have to sell it. Let's stop it. And we're going out today listening to this discussion. The full amount of it will be on the website, so you can listen to the whole one.
Negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a massive free trade agreement with Mexico, Canada, Japan, Singapore, and seven other countries. And I come to the floor today to ask a fundamental question. Who will benefit from the TPP? American workers, consumers, small businesses, taxpayers, or the biggest multinational corporations in the world? One strong hint is buried down in the fine print of the closely guarded draft. The provision, an increasingly common feature of international trade agreements, is called Investor Dispute Settlement, or ISDS. Now, the name may sound mild, but this provision fundamentally tilts the playing field further in favor of big multinational corporations. Worse yet, it undermines U.S. sovereignty. ISDS allows foreign companies to challenge American laws and potentially pick up huge payouts from taxpayers without ever stepping foot in an American court. Now, here's how it works. Imagine that the United States bans a toxic chemical that is often added to gasoline. We ban it because we believe it is dangerous for people's health or harmful to the environment. If a foreign company that makes this toxic chemical wants to sell it in the U.S., it would normally have to challenge that in a U.S. court. But with ISDS, the company could skip the U.S. court and go before an international panel of arbitrators. If the company wins, the ruling cannot be challenged in U.S. courts, and the arbitration panel could require the American taxpayers to cough up millions, even billions of dollars in damages. ISDS has the power to impose gigantic fines, but it doesn't have independent judges. Instead, highly paid corporate lawyers go back and forth between representing corporations one day and sitting in judgment of corporations the next. Now, I don't know, maybe that makes sense in an arbitration between two corporations, but not in cases between corporations and governments. We should have real doubts about how likely it is that a lawyer looking to attract high-paying corporate clients will rule against those corporations when it's his or her turn to sit in the judge's seat. It's also a real problem that the only international investors, get to use these courts. Investors that are, by and large, large corporations. If a Vietnamese company with American operations wants to challenge an increase in the U.S. minimum wage, it can use ISDS. But if an American labor union believes the Vietnamese companies are paying slave labor wages in violation of trade commitments, the union has to try to wind itself through the Vietnamese courts. Good luck with that. These rigged pseudo-courts were created after World War II because investors worried about putting money into developing countries where the legal systems were just not as dependable. They were concerned that a corporation might build a plant today only to watch a dictator confiscate it tomorrow. ISDS was born to encourage foreign investment in countries with weak legal systems. Now, look, I don't know if these justifications made sense back then, but they sure don't make sense now. Countries in the TPP are hardly emerging economies with weak legal systems. Australia and Japan have well-developed, well-respected legal systems, and multinational corporations navigate those legal systems every single day. But ISDS would preempt their courts, too. And to the extent there are countries that are riskier politically, market competition can solve that problem. Countries that respect property rights and the rule of law, like the United States, should be more competitive. And if a company wants to invest in a country with a weak legal system, then it should buy political risk insurance, which is available. The use of ISDS is on the rise. From 1959 to 2002, there were fewer than 100 ISDS claims worldwide. But by 2012 alone, there were 58 cases. That's in 1 year. Here are some examples of recent cases under various treaties with ISDS provisions. A French company sued Egypt because Egypt raised its minimum wage. A Swedish company sued Germany because Germany decided to phase out nuclear power after the Fukushima disaster. A Dutch company sued the Czech Republic because the Czech Republic didn't bail out a bank that the Dutch company partially owned. And American corporations are getting in on the action, too. Philip Morris is trying to use ISDS to stop Uruguay from implementing new tobacco regulations aimed at cutting domestic smoking rates.
And that's Senator Elizabeth Warren. The full discussion is on progressiveradionetwork.com or prn.fm. I want to thank you all for listening, and a special call out to Mildred Milton. She sent me a card. Dear Gary, thank you for the gift. My son Michael lives in New York City and stopped you on the street and told you I had just celebrated my 90th birthday and that over the years I've gained much useful information from your books. And so she says she's still going strong, healthy as can be. So Mildred at 90, good for you. We wish you all the best. And I remember meeting your son on the street. So thank you for the card. Have a nice day, everyone.